it's Dua Lipa, and I'm at your service. Join me as I serve up personal conversations with my sensational guests.
Dua Lipa interviews Tim Cook.
Technology doesn't want to be good or bad. Mm. It's in the hands of the creator.
It's not every day that I have the CEO of the world's biggest company in my living room.
If you're looking at your phone more than you're looking in someone's eyes, you're doing the wrong thing.
Dua Lipa, at your service. Listen to all episodes on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, it's Anna Hill here with the Farming Today podcast. In this episode, we travel to the Cotswolds to hear why more than 50 farmers are working to restore one large landscape. And truly British baked beans arrive at last, from crop to can in less than 40 miles.
It's fantastic. We've had a good year working with Andy Ward, the farmer, seeing how the crop is being grown, to finally be in a factory to see the beans being cooked. It's really an important milestone.
We'll have a little taste later on. First today, what does an American oil man do in retirement? The answer isn't always cruises, Florida and golf. Phil Close has turned to the hard graft of raising beef cattle on the hills above the South Ayrshire coast. Phil and his daughter Heather are doing it differently, raising smaller, all grass-fed animals that stay in the fields all winter, even as storms howl in off the Irish Sea. Their nature-based system avoids medication and produces great-tasting meat, but can they make it pay? Richard Baines finds out.
So in this mob, we have most of our cows with heifer calves. They are Aberdeen Angus, mostly modern Angus, some native Angus. We also have some traditional Herefords, and then we also have some smaller Herefords. Dad imported the embryos from the States. They're called Anxiety Herefords.
So a lot of these cattle are quite different to what other farmers might have.
They're probably smaller. I think we're the only farmers to have the Anxieties in the UK. Obviously, the modern Angus are very common. The native Angus, slightly less so. The traditional Herefords, a bit less so also. We've bred for smaller animals, so they are probably smaller than most farmers would have in the UK at the moment. In the plains of Africa or in the US, bison would have moved as herds across the plains. So what we're trying to do here is mimic that slightly. So we move the cows every day, sometimes two or three times a day. So we've just opened up the field at the top there, and we'll move the cows into a new patch of grass shortly. And then we have a solar-powered automatic gate, which will then open up a fresh patch of grass at about 4 p.m. The point of doing this is to not overgraze the grass.
How many cattle are there here, Phil?
About 75. I always wanted to buy a farm. My wife, Rosemary, didn't really believe me. She heard the story, but we did it.
Every holiday we went to as a kid, I remember Dad always looking at the farmland, going, oh, I wonder if we could have a farm over here.
We had, much of the time, lived outside of London. The oil company moved its exploration division up to Aberdeen, so I commuted weekly between Aberdeen and London because we didn't want to move the kids in their schooling. Moved here, the big farmhouse was in serious need of a lot of renovation, and then we had two cottages. We decided to renovate them, and I think about 2004 I teamed up with a guy and we started raising Aberdeen Angus bulls for the sale, and the animals were just getting taller and taller all the time. And me, in my frame of thinking, I thought, I don't think a farmer would make money on that. The feedlot processors do, and the processors do. So 2010, I wanted to grow the herd. I'd put up a small barn for the animals, but they'd outgrown that, and I didn't see any possible making any return on investing in more barns, more equipment. I thought I'd try raising the animals year-round out here on grass. Made a whole bunch of mistakes. Key thing is rest. And in 2020, I think it was, we had a field we were going to cut for silage, 10 hectares. And the week I was going to cut, the rain set in, as it can do. So by mid-July, I decided, well, I'm not going to get this for silage. I'm going to graze it intensely. And that gave all the rest of the farm all that time to rest. And that gave us a much better grass platform to graze through over the next winter. We now, on average, graze our fields twice a year. And that's improved the soil structure very dramatically.
And you can hear more from Phil Close, the full story, on Radio 4 at 6:35 on Sunday morning in On Your Farm with Richard Baines. Now, all week we've been travelling around England to see some of the 22 pilot schemes for landscape recovery. These are the most ambitious environmental projects in the government's post-Brexit farm policy. Different schemes are being designed in the other home nations. Landscape recovery schemes are very large scale, bringing groups of farmers and land managers together to enhance the environment across miles of countryside which form particular ecosystems. This week, the government announced a further 34 projects, and they say that together the schemes involve more than 700 farmers and landowners across 200,000 hectares. One of the projects is based around the catchment of the River Evenlode in West Oxfordshire and aims to reduce flooding by changing the way the land is managed across 3,500 hectares. The North East Cotswold Farmer Cluster, which has 68 members, received £500,000 from the government over 2 years to set up the scheme. A year into the process, Heather Simons has been speaking to the cluster facilitator, Tim Field, and one of the farmers, Matt Izod.
So in this field, when the weather's really terrible and the river breaks its banks, a new channel forms straight through the middle and floods out about two-thirds of the field.
Matt, this must make farming this field very challenging.
We always expect there's going to be at least one flood a year. The last few years, it's actually been three or four times through the winter, and only a few years ago, we had one in July. So we had our crop in this field, and unfortunately, we nearly lost it at harvest. So the risk of this particular field is just not worth it. If we can create a complete different habitat and start working with the river, it'd be better for our farm, better for the wildlife, better for the wider environment.
That phrase, working with the river, is kind of what this landscape recovery scheme is all about, isn't it, Tim? What have you achieved in the first year?
It's been a busy year, and some of the farmers might not have seen much activity, but we've basically been setting up this new governance structure. We've had a lot of money spent on legal fees, building financial models, so that we can equitably distribute the income that we'll get from selling this natural capital and actually valuing it.
Well, you've mentioned there's a lot of paperwork, and you're holding what looks like quite an official piece of paper. It's huge, actually.
Well, this tells us where our interventions are most sensible, basically, where we should be reconnecting the river with the floodplain and encouraging flooding and turning an arable field like this into a floodplain mosaic of habitats and grasslands. It tells us where flooding's happening from down slopes and up in the catchment, where we might want to plant trees to slow the flow.
You're kind of getting your plan, but Matt, has anything actually changed from a farmer's perspective on the ground yet?
No, a year in and we're still no spades in the ground. And I think it's exciting, but frustrating at the same time. But I think it's really important when you're looking at a long-term scheme or even short-term to think hard. This is a big change.
So let's take a closer look at the Evenlode then, the river in this field. The vegetation on the side is all bent over, washed over, where the water has rushed out of this river and into your field, Matt. It looks like it was going at quite a rate.
Yeah, the damage it's doing to the field, it's unmanageable at this point.
So this one field is what you're describing as a pilot within the pilot, where you're looking at things you can do that then you could roll out across the whole scheme. What could this field look like for you?
I want to keep more water on the field all year round. Wetland birds absolutely love this site. It's the one benefit of flooding for them, where they flock here. I want to keep at least 5 acres that is farming and is a bit more manageable. So that would be pasture, so we can hay make that and we can have livestock.
And Tim, when Matt's talking about all of these different little bits of this field that would be managed in different ways, who is going to be paying for that? Is that all just the government's money or not?
So we've looked in this different ways, but if you look at the economic value of the biodiversity, the water storage, the cleaning the water, the capture of carbon, we're looking at, you know, nearly £10,000 per hectare of value. Now, those markets don't exist yet. So we're working hard to create those markets. Some of them exist, biodiversity net gain, for instance, so the developers having to pay for loss of habitat. But that's not going to get us everywhere. New markets around natural flood management. We have the railway line that crosses the River Evenlode 27 times. You know, they will stand to benefit from natural flood management measures we put in.
Matt, I want to talk to you about the money as well, because how much of a risk are you taking by taking this field out of arable?
At the minute, with the markets developing, there's a huge risk. But equally, our risk of cropping this field is just as great. We very rarely turn a profit on this particular field. The habitats that we can create, if the finances are right, it's a complete no-brainer to do this on this particular field. And I could keep bumbling along for 10 years trying to farm this field, and I will either lose money or go bust.
Cotswold farmer Matt Izod. Now, baked beans on our toast could soon be British grown, following a UK initiative between scientists and farmers. Although they've long been a family favourite, until now the beans in baked beans can't be grown in this country, so they've been imported from North America, China and Ethiopia. Following years of research, new varieties of haricot beans have been developed to suit the UK climate, reducing our reliance on importing them. Farmers here can use them as a break crop in a cereal rotation because they fix nitrogen in the soil. Farmer Andrew Ward grew a commercial crop of haricot beans at his farm in Ledenham in Lincolnshire, and they've now been processed and canned just 40 miles away in Spalding. Lindsay Smith reports.
I'm in the BBC staff room cooking, would you believe it, beans on toast. They look like your typical beans, taste the same, but these are very special. The first ever haricot beans commercially harvested in the UK, tinned during a trial at the Spalding Prince's factory.
Just going to have to strap them in to stop them falling out.
Here's Liam O'Donnell, the company's new product development manager.
They're delivered to us in the dry format, and we have to rehydrate them. Then the next process is fill these into the can. We would then add the tomato sauce and spices.
What spices?
The spices are unique to us, and they're our trade secret.
Whilst the nation's favourite quick tea normally takes 4 minutes in the microwave, the seeds for these beans took 12 years to develop by scientists at the University of Warwick. Here's Professor Eric Holub from the university's Life Sciences Department.
It's fantastic. It's a milestone. We've had a good year working with Andy Ward, the farmer, seeing how the crop is being grown, to finally be in a factory to see the beans being cooked. It's really an important milestone.
The main aim, to make them taste exactly the same as what the public are used to. They were grown by Andrew Ward in Lincolnshire. He spoke to us as they were being harvested.
We're importing beans at the moment from Canada, America and China to make baked beans, and that is really wrong. We need more homegrown food, homegrown protein. Going to the factory and tasting them and seeing how they're cooked, how they're mixed with tomato sauce and how they are produced and put onto toast, that's what I really want to try. I want to sit and have baked beans, these beans, on toast.
Although there's no doubt that this is an achievement for science and farming, there are other considerations when thinking about replacing some of the imported raw beans in the supply chain, as David McDermott from the company explains.
We'd have to be very mindful in terms of not just performance, in terms of the line and quality that, and taste that consumers will expect. We also, of course, have to be mindful of value and affordability, and that's important for us and important for our consumers as well.
Watching the speed of production lines in this factory, it's clear how much the nation loves beans. We eat 2 million tins every day. It could take years to replace the entire supply chain from Canada and China. But today shows what could be possible.
Lindsay Smith reporting from Lincolnshire. That's all we have time for today. I'm Anna Hill. The studio manager was Caitlin Gaisley, and the producer in Bristol was Beatrice Fenton.